We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, remember, folks, Rocket can. It's Ken Carmen on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4CBS. Brandon Marcello going to join us, National College Football Reporter, 24-7 Sports, 1240 p.m. Eastern. Also, Top 5 coming up in 40 minutes because joining us right now on the show, talk NFL and Carson Wentz, where all these other quarterbacks could be going, and the salary cap, one of the very best to talk about it. NFL Network analyst, three-time Super Bowl champion, former general manager at Charlie Casserly on Twitter. It's Charlie Casserly who joins us on the show this morning. Charlie, thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you guys.
Charlie, first off, your thoughts. It seemed like everybody was like, oh, man, the Colts make a ton of sense. The Colts make a ton of sense. And then Carson Wentz, Charlie, goes to the Colts. What were your first thoughts on that trade?
Well, I think it's good for Carson Wentz and could be very good for the Colts. Before this year, which was a disaster for many reasons, which I'll get into, you know, Wentz had played, for the most part, at a pretty high level. And even last year, they won the last four to get into the playoffs. In his Super Bowl year, he was at an MVP pace when he got hurt. So when you look at him this year, disaster or everything around him. The offensive line from day one, in the opening game with the Washington team, had injuries, and they couldn't protect him. The wide receiver position was a mess with injuries, and he really didn't have a clear-cut number one. Tight end missed time there with players. At running back, Sanders missed a few games. So it was chaos around him with players, all right? Now, the book on this guy is he's going to hold the ball, pressure him, he'll throw it up. Okay, keep him in the pocket. He's dangerous outside the pocket. So let's reverse that. Now he goes to the Colts with a coach that he is comfortable. I'm not saying he wasn't comfortable with Peterson, but a coach, and there's three people on the staff, including the head coach, Frank Reich, that have been around him and know him. So expect the ball to come out quicker. Expect to see him move out of the pocket, bootlegs. They've got a better offensive line. They're going to have a very good running game. So they're going to, you know, say calm him down, take the pressure off him, like with Phillip Rivers. A year ago, Phillip Rivers, there was a split decision on whether this guy was worth signing. Too many turnovers. System, they cut the turnovers way down. So it all comes down to me is, will Wentz accept coaching? If he'll accept coaching and be accountable and listen, then this guy should bounce back and be effective.
Charlie Casserly joining us on the show. I go back to week 17 and, you know, the whole Nate Sudfeld business at the end of the game. And I know Jalen Hurts wasn't playing that well. But is that a look into maybe the chaos that was surrounding Carson Wentz, not just on the field, but also maybe in the front office and with the coaching staff?
Well, yeah, you have a good point. When you take a quarterback in the second round, you know, that's going to either get the quarterback mad, Aaron Rodgers, or get the quarterback unsettled. It may have got Wentz more unsettled than mad. I get what they did. Personally, I wouldn't have done that because I think it can rattle your quarterback. It becomes a topic of discussion that you don't need. And Wentz is your future at that point in time. So, but I understand their concept of taking the quarterback and the quarterback factory. Green Bay did it with Ron Wolf. Ron Wolf wanted to take quarterback every year, and he'd have some guys like Brunell that he traded, and Hasselbeck he traded. So and he made good on it because, you know, obviously with Favre, Favre about lasted them all, and then here come Rodgers. So I think it backfired. I think it wasn't playing well. All right, we benched him. Hurts got hot, but defense has kind of caught up with him. The Sudfeld, I heard Hurts wasn't playing well, but I don't have any confidence in Sudfeld, so I might have stuck with Hurts in the game when they went to Sudfeld.
You said, Charlie Casserly joining us on the show, you said that he has to accept coaching. Is that bare minimum what he had? Because I'm a big fan of Frank Reich. I'm a big fan of Chris Ballard. I respect them both immensely there. Even though I don't think much of Carson Wentz right now, I really do think this thing can be flipped around by the end of 2021, Charlie.
Well, I do. See, with Phillip Rivers, Rivers had a lot of turnovers with the Chargers in his last year. I think his last 2 years. And a lot of them were forced balls, you know, trying to make a play. I don't want to get hit. I'm going to throw the ball up there and trying to make a play. Well, they told him, you got to change the game. This isn't going to work. And somewhere in the season, maybe after the first third, he did change his game and cut his interceptions way down. And they won 11 games, and they made the playoffs. So then you look at Wentz, before this year, I think he had, it was roughly 80 to 20 on touchdowns to interceptions. So the potential is there. Now, whether we got to rebuild the confidence in him, whether we got to, you know, get him more into our system and not freelance. But I think they know what he can do. And to me, defenses have it right. This guy is not going to go through a long progression and read complex defenses. Keep it simple. Ball comes out fast. I've seen Reich do that. And again, Reich knows this guy. And they believe that they've traded for the guy that threw 80 touchdowns and 20 interceptions. I'm rounding the numbers off.
Philadelphia has that 6th overall pick. Do they have to take a quarterback this year?
Well, if you're not sold on one, don't force it. They believe in Jalen Hurts. I think Hurts was underrated by many people. When I watched the tape, I thought he was better than what I was reading about him. Not so much on scouting reports, but in the media. But I thought the guy was athletic, had a live arm. I thought he had some sense as far as knowing where the open receivers were. Defenses wanted to keep him in the pocket and make him win from the pocket. And then as time went on, he kind of struggled with that. Now, we got to give the kid a break. He just started out. He got no real, you know, you don't really have a, you have no preseason. You have no practice game. See? Mm-hmm. So, I think that the arrow is up. I'm not sure what the ceiling is. If there was a quarterback there I truly believed in, I would take him. And, of course, that would cause us more confusion. But I wouldn't pass on a quarterback. That if I've got a quarterback rated as a top 10 player, I think I've got to take him and would take him as opposed to a player that, you know, was rated second to third round in the draft and we've got him even though we like him. Philly has always been aggressive. And I said on the air yesterday, I'd be very surprised if they ever made a call to Houston about Deshaun Watson. That's in their DNA. And why don't you make that call?
Well, now that's exciting. I tell you what, that would change a lot of things around with the Philadelphia Eagles, at least with how people think of them. What do you think, by the way, what do you think is going to happen with Deshaun Watson here? Take a stab at it as of February 20th.
Boy, I don't know. You know, I've been in these situations here where we had one years ago with a defensive lineman named Sean Gilbert who we franchised. And made him a tremendous offer, okay, at the time. And he wouldn't accept it. And I thought he was going to come in, and we didn't adequately come up with a replacement. You're not going to replace a star player, but at least you can get a veteran in. And I didn't do a good job that as a defensive tackle position. This guy's stuck now. This guy does not want to go back there. And so the thing with Houston is, what you have to say to yourself is this. Are we willing to deal with this for 12 months? That's what you have to say to yourself. And if you feel that way, there's no discussion. There's no discussion at all. And then you got to go get somebody to go play quarterback for you over the next 12 months. You only won 4 games with this guy. So, hey, you may not win 4 games with somebody else. And you'll have a high pick and you can continue your rebuild, start your rebuilding process because right now you got a problem with it.
Charlie,
go ahead.
Well, let me, because you mentioned the rebuild thing, and that's the thing I'm most concerned. Like, I'd love Nick Caserio to sit down and try to talk Deshaun Watson into staying. I think he's good for the city, good fit, all that stuff. But if he's not going to play, if they're going to just drag this thing out, it's like, man, you're kind of putting your arms behind your back and playing this season for nothing instead of trying to build. Aren't you?
No. The thing you have to see, you got to know what you're going to get, and that's the tricky part in this thing. Now, the deal, you know, if Jacksonville gave me that first pick, I'd do the thing, and then I'd figure out whatever we got in the rest of the deal is a bonus, because I got Trevor Lawrence now. Okay, that's the one guy that I would make the trade for. I don't think they're going to get this bonanza. I really don't, because Jacksonville, I would take Trevor Lawrence, even though we know Deshaun Watson is a proven product, and keep all my picks and build from there instead of giving up all my picks for Deshaun Watson. So, I mean, that's you know, and that's a debatable point. I mean, we don't know the right answer to that one until down the road.
What if you were the Jets? Number two.
I wouldn't mortgage the future.
Yeah.
Hey, the Jets got a lot of holes now. I mean, we're going to win the back page. We're going to get people excited. We're going to sell tickets. But how are we going to stop anybody? Well, who's he going to throw to? I just, you know, if it's safe for our, the second pick in the draft, all right, I'm taking Deshaun Watson, and I'll keep the rest of my picks. Okay, now we're trading quarterback for quarterback. We're trading Zach Wilson for Deshaun Watson. So we all make that trade. We got the rest of our picks, and then we can go. And we got plenty of cap room.
Charlie Casserly.
We're still a ways away, okay, but yeah. at least we'll have some fun with that one.
Charlie Casserly joining us on the show. Well, that's always the argument that I've heard for the last how many weeks now that this has been going on, and I go, well, if you give up too many picks, then you just become the Texans by the time 2023 comes around. If you don't have anything to build around him, then you're just going to become Houston again. Now, I think there's other problems, obviously, but, you know, those are conversations for other days. I see why Zach Wilson has shot up the board. And I got nothing against the kid whatsoever. I there's a lot of things to see why he would shoot up the board. I just want to know, why is Justin Fields, it feels like he's in a free fall to some people. Why are people cooling on Justin Fields here in the month of February?
Okay, here's what I've learned. I've been on both sides, okay? I'm now on your side of the fence, okay? I've been on the other side of the fence, all right, with a team. There are two drafts going on right now. There's the team one and there's the media one. The media one is behind the teams and is in a totally different world. Okay, when we took Mario Williams, the media crucified us for doing it. Okay, teams knew how good he was. So that's an example. Same thing with Reggie Bush. Okay, so here's the thing. I obviously talk to a lot of teams. I get grades. Gives me a range, and then I start looking at tape. What I get, and when I watch the tape on Justin Fields, it's anticipation is the thing. It's not like, for example, you're obviously Dwayne Jones, okay, the Giant quarterback. Right? He had excellent anticipation. This guy is not close to him. I think this guy's better than Haskins, a better athlete than Haskins. So he gives you a better runner than Haskins. I think he's a little bit more accurate than Haskins. But when you're talking about being able to see it, find the receiver, get the ball to him, as opposed to tucking it down and run, he's behind all these guys. Now, does that mean that he can't play in the NFL? No. He might get the right system. He could be Cam Newton. And obviously, win an MVP, okay? So on that part there. But that's what people see. That's what I see. So in other words, what you have is somehow this guy has been created with the media, with these mock drafts. Mock drafts don't mean anything till the week of the draft. So again, who you don't see the team saying it, all right? You see everybody else saying it.
What is the best fit for J.J. Watt?
You know, I haven't given that as much thought as to answer your question. Let me give you an answer, though. Mm-hmm. Here's what he is. He's an inside pass rusher. He can't win outside anymore, okay? And he can play the run outside. I don't know if I want him inside getting banged up all the time. So he's a defensive end and a 4-3 and a nickel tackle. I don't know if I'm a 34 team I'm going to get my money's worth out of him. So I still think the guy could play. Somebody's going to listen to what I just said and said, well, that's not real good. No, it is real good because you can't find inside pass rushers. And when you talk to teams and you talk to playing Brady, playing Breeze, and I know Breeze is going to retire, but playing Mahomes, inside pressure is what no quarterback likes. This guy can still give you that. Maybe not in sacks, but in disruptions. So, Cleveland's got some inside rushers. Green Bay could use another one. Then we might have to platoon him because they're a 34 team. Now, he's not going to be an outside linebacker, but that's kind of what he is. Now, again, what are you going to pay that guy? I don't know where the hang up is on something like that.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what he is.
Salary cap said it was going to be $180 million. Do you see that number moving anywhere by the time we get to free agency, or is that set at $180 there?
Yeah, I have no idea on that. I think it's by the same. That's a minimum. They give you the impression it could go a little higher, but I usually they're pretty good about targeting where the number's going to be when they do that. But I have no idea factually what's going to happen.
Final one: how do the Chiefs avoid a Super Bowl hangover here?
It's tough to go to three in a row. And I don't know that if they don't go, it's not going to be a hangover. It's that it's hard to just do it. How do I want to say this? Maybe caught up with them, played them better defensively, smarter, because they played a lot of close games down the end. Atlanta, who won four games or something, defensed them masterfully with their plan. And so people are going to play. They know how to play them better, which means vary your coverages, keep them off balance, pressure Mahomes, or box him in and just keep him in the pocket. Okay, and he's still a good quarterback, but that's how you have to defense him. Take away the deep ball. You just eliminate the deep ball from their game with a safety deep and press the corners and press the receivers off and on. Just change the coverages. Make them think about it. Not that he can't, but you do the same thing with Brady. So it's just hard to repeat along the way. So the odds are against them, and I don't think they'll do it, but I think they'll be there at the end. I think they'll be competing, obviously, because the thing about them is they got great leadership with the head coach, Steve Spagnuolo, who's been there on the defensive side, and then with the leaders in Mahomes and Tyrann Mathieu. Those guys keep it straight in the locker room, and I don't see them having any major contract problems, so they're not going to have that thing to fight.
Charlie, can't thank you enough for the time. You're one of the most respected in the business. We thank you, and we hope we have you on again soon.
Okay, great to be with you now.
Thank you. Charlie Casserly, NFL Network analyst, three-time Super Bowl champ, former general manager, at Charlie Casserly on Twitter. I got something to admit when we come back. And also, the beginning of something very uncomfortable for NFL fans. It's Ken Carmen on CBS Sports Radio.
This is the Ken Carmen Show on CBS Sports Radio.
855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Top five coming up in just a matter of moments. 11:35, 11:40, we'll do it. Top five sports rants. Already have mine figured out. Pirno would be proud of me. Already have mine figured out. Love having Charlie Casserly on. I'm thankful Charlie Casserly will come on. Charlie Casserly, in a weird roundabout way, he don't know this and he ain't even listening to this, so I can say really whatever I want. But Charlie Casserly and Vince Cellini and a few other people, I'm sure. Merrill Hodge, definitely one of them. One of the guys who kind of raised me. So the Browns, it's weird. I'm in Cleveland. And at the time, I'm a young man. I'm 34. I'm getting older. Pirno, do you consider 34 young or old? Where are we at here?
Young.
Okay. I'm a much younger man at the time. When was Johnny Manziel taken in the draft by the Cleveland Browns? Was that 2014? Was it around then?
2012?
It was that long ago now? Manziel was taken in 2012? Perfect. Makes it even better. So at the time, Pirno, find out. I want to make sure I'm right on this. The Browns take Johnny Manziel. And I was one of the people, I questioned it. I go, yeah, you know, it's a little undersized. I don't know. And I didn't think they'd take him.
No, you're right. 2014.
Okay. I thought so. So at the time, 2011, 2014, 3 years. So I'm 27 years old, right? When they take Johnny Manziel. And I'm getting ready for camp and going to the Browns and all this stuff. And before the draft, I just didn't think they'd take him. I questioned it. And we had people who called in. And they were big Johnny Manziel supporters. I'm going, you know, he's under 6 feet. Got a strong arm. Got a real strong arm. All that stuff. And I didn't know he had the personal problems that he did. I mean, there were always rumors. But I don't like to do that because it's weird. We're talking about we're talking about really serious personal problems with the man. So I just didn't think. I go, there's 32 teams. Someone else will take him. We're not going to take him. Don't worry about it. So the night of the draft comes around. I'm doing the draft show. I'm at the facility. I don't think I've ever told this on air. Pirno gets to hear it for the first time. I'm at the facility, and they have a gorgeous facility over there. And they have a gorgeous studio. And as I'm doing the show, we're getting ready for the Browns pick at 22. And all of a sudden, one of my co-hosts at the time, who was getting texts from the truck, has this like huge look on his face. And then I see somebody from PR, one of the interns, just goes running down the hallway, top speed. Now, I've been there for a lot of drafts. I was there when they drafted Danny Shelton. Somebody walks to another part of the building. I was there when they drafted Justin Gilbert. Earlier in that draft at number 8, somebody walked from one side of the building to another. It's typical. This person ran hauling ass, top speed. And I went, oh my God, they drafted him. And they drafted him. And the rest of the night was a celebration. People went nuts. And over the course of time, it does become intoxicating because, like any fan, you become defensive of your players. And I was still naive, still hadn't been seasoned properly. And I remember watching Charlie Casserly. He came to camp. I was all excited about the possibility. I wanted it. I didn't know if it would. I wanted it to work out with Johnny Manziel so badly. I wanted it to happen so badly. One, because the Browns have been looking for a quarterback forever. Two, because it would have been a great story. It really would have. Heisman Trophy winner, different type of quarterback. It's fun to talk about different QBs. It's fun to not sit there and look at, all right, this guy's 6'5", right-hander, plants in the pocket. Same guy. I hate the conversation about prototype quarterbacks. That's why I like, and honestly, that's why I like Patrick Mahomes. That's why I like Lamar Jackson. That's why I like Baker Mayfield now. That's why I like these guys, because they're different types of quarterbacks. It's not Drew Bledsoe for eons and eons and eons, because they're fun to talk about. And then if one of them works out, like if Lamar Jackson wins a Super Bowl next year, then he's the prototype. Then he's the guy. We're finding more athletic quarterbacks than we ever have. Offenses are different. It's fun. It's more fun to talk about. I wanted it to work out so bad. Charlie Casserly comes to camp. No kidding. Watches for what seemed like an hour. An hour. Goes on TV. This guy ain't got it. He was a third-round pick. And I'm going, no, I'm so angry. And now I look back on that, and I kind of, when I have a guy like Charlie Casserly on, which Charlie Casserly has made mistakes, and he's the first person to say it. If I have a guy like Vince Cellini on to talk about NBA, when I have a guy like Merrill Hodge on, who we had a couple of months ago, and I talk to these guys, like I always try to tell them before, like, hey, thanks for coming on, because I ripped you for having a dissenting opinion about a guy who's really a goof, and I really just needed to grow up in my own right. Like, there are things that people in the media say that is patently unfair for quarterbacks, for players, for athletes in general. There are definitely things like that. And there are things that some people say just to get attention where I say, I don't respect that opinion, and I don't respect the person making that opinion. And I've called out those names on air. I don't need to do it now. If it ever comes up again, I will. There are certain guys who are in media now that I just don't respect, and I don't think I ever will. I don't respect their opinion, and I don't respect them. But a guy like Vince Cellini, a guy like Charlie Casserly, who I argued over my Johnny, now I look back on that and I go, that was really dumb. That was really stupid. Thankfully, they were forgiving of me, because it was really stupid. And these are grown individuals who see grown-ups who play the game, and a guy like Charlie Casserly, and especially Merrill Hodge, both of those guys, there's a difference, and you learn this over time, and I had to learn this over time, that there are guys who love to play the game, and then there are guys who love what the game gives them. And they get figured out very quick in the NFL. And as a person who covers the Browns, I've had my fill of those guys. Up until this year, they've been kicking ass and taking names, and hopefully it stays that way. But I've had my fill of guys who have come in, and they're really happy with what the NFL has given them or what the first contract they got has given them. They don't have the love for the game. I've seen plenty of those guys, seen plenty of those draft picks, seen plenty of those failures. And Johnny Manziel was one of them. And the guy drafted before him, Justin Gilbert, who's a bigger bust than Johnny Manziel, was another one of those guys, sad to say. Likeable people. And things went awry. And so that's why I am interested in the draft all the time, because You'll walk across the stage virtually even again probably this year, but it's the biggest moment of that person's life up until that moment. And for some of them, it will be the biggest moment of their professional lives ever. And then for some, we're just starting the conversation. For some, it will be B-roll when they're in Super Bowl appearances. It will be B-roll when they go to the Hall of Fame. That's what makes the first round of the NFL draft so incredibly interesting. And why I'm thankful that the guys I just mentioned will go, yeah, I know you stuck your foot in your mouth 7-8 years ago, but I'll forgive you and I'll come on. 855-212-4CBS. Up next, the top five sports rants. No playoffs, no practice, ain't going to happen. I promise. We're not going to hack it up just yet. That's coming up at high noon Eastern. It's Ken Carmen on CBS Sports Radio. Right now it's the latest sports update with Marco Belletti.
You're listening to Ken Carmen on CBS Sports Radio.
855-212-4CBS. Brandon Marcello going to join us. National College Football Reporter, 24-7 Sports Coaching Carousel done. How deep is Tennessee in? We'll get the whole thing. Worried about Tennessee, man. Worried about the Vols. 855-212-4CBS. Maybe the beginning of something very uncomfortable. That coming up. But I gotta welcome in Pierno.
Hello, back again.
Hello, Pierno.
Hello, Ken.
You're gonna wish you were here at noon because I got something really nice and hack about noon.
Nah, man, you should have done it earlier.
I want to do it at noon. I want Connor to have a shot at it. I want him to take a whack at it. I got a great thing there, buddy. Got a great, great thing.
No, I'm happy for you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Are we ready?
Yeah, we're doing the top five sports rants because Draymond Green went on a rant this week. So we'll do the top five sports rants today. And I'm back with audio again. We love the audio. It's so much fun. And especially
you got audio, too?
I got audio. Come on, you have to have audio for the rants.
For a second, I go, this could be a short segment. I better have something ready. And here you are.
Yeah, it might take a while. All right,
okay.
So
we're
going to start back in 2008. Okay. We got some women's college basketball. So the Michigan Wolverines, they blew a double-digit lead.
Oh my goodness.
And they just could not collect any offensive rebounds against Wisconsin. And their head coach, Kevin Borseth, he made it clear before even uttering a word that he was not happy.
That's how I feel. Damn sick and tired of getting out-rebounded. 25 offensive rebounds. First time we block out, we get called for a damn block out. We're pushing people. Meanwhile, they're on the other court grabbing rebounds, going over the top and grabbing them. We get one offensive rebound, the other we get called for over the back. We don't block out very damn well, and we're not getting called, one or the other. That's where I'm frustrated. That's where my whole frustration comes in, offensive rebounds. The entire thing came down to offensive rebound. They got every stupid offensive rebound, and we didn't get one of them. What else do you want to know?
All right, the best part of this video is the beginning. It's so much better with the video because Kevin Borseth, what I'm telling you, he flies in to the podium and just slams the stat sheet down onto the podium. So you knew right from the get-go that you were in for a treat. So if you haven't seen the video, you have to go back and watch the video. Just he flies in to the podium and just slams the sheet down. It's hysterical. So Kevin Borseth and Michigan there comes in at number five for me. So now number four. We're going to go for some college football. And we're going to go to Coastal Carolina back in 2011. And for me, this one's an all-timer just because of how strange it is. This wasn't even after a game. This came after a bad practice when the Coastal Carolina football coach, he wanted more dogs.
Trying to get our two boys ready to carry them to golf tournament for practice, right? 12 cats live across the road. Our door's open. Screen's broke. We need to get a new screen door, but the screen's broke. So you can come in through the screen, but you can't get back out of it. I turn and look. There's a little kitty cat in our kitchen. So I said, what are you doing in here, little kitty cat? By that time, the cat turns, tries to get back out. That screen won't go that way. Cat starts going, meow, all crazy. And I told our players, we need more dogs. Bo's barking in the back. I have to go shut Bo up. Mel's like, what's going on? I said, it's a cat in the house. Cat in the house? I said, yeah, there's a cat in the house. So I told our players, I tried to let it out the front door. Meow, meow. The cat's still going crazy in there. And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Meow, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats. We need more dogs.
Need more dogs. Okay, so this happened before the team's second game of the season, after they had won the first game, but David Bennett clearly was not satisfied. They wound up winning the second game of the season as well, but just so bizarre, the cats and the dogs from David Bennett. So that came in at number four for me. Now, my top three are all baseball related. So number three, we go back to April of 93. The Royals lose to the Tigers. They were off, they were not off to the start that they had hoped for. And the post-game press conference started out, and it was started out fine. And then a reporter asked a question that manager Hal McCray did not like, and then we got a meltdown.
Did you consider Brett for Miller with the bases loaded in the seventh?
No, no, don't ask me all these stupid ass questions. No. In the all these stupid ass questions every night.
Find the I hit Brett for Miller starting the game. He's playing against left handed pitchers. Brett is not playing against left handed pitchers. Find the I bat for Miller. You think I'm a goddamn fool? I'm tired of all these questions every night, and stay out here asking all these dumb ass questions. Sick and tired. I'm fed up with every thing. No from you guys. No from you players. And yet they can do any thing they want to do. I'm sick and tired of all this bullshit. Now, put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it, says Hal McCray. So he just throws anything and everything that is in front of him, including his telephone. That was like my favorite part. He picks up the phone, he spins, then he tosses it.
It's so good.
And then the best part of the video probably is one of the reporters walks out of the office nonchalantly, and he has a big gash on his cheek and he's bleeding.
Yes.
That was probably my favorite part of the video. And he actually, Hal McCray and the Royals, after that bad start, he actually led them to a winning record there in 93. But Hal McCray, number three for me. Number two, this also baseball, and Tommy Lasorda. So long story short, a Dodgers reliever drilled one of the Padres in the head, like moments after he gave up a home run. So a few days later, one of the Padres infielder, Kurt Bavacqua, said that Lasorda, who referred to it, the fat little Italian, he said that Lasorda should be fined for ordering the beating. So he was accusing Lasorda of telling his pitcher to throw at the San Diego hitter. And here was Tommy's response.
I think that is very, very bad for that man to make an accusation like that. That is terrible. I have never, ever, since I've managed, ever told a pitcher to throw at anybody, nor will I ever. And if I ever did, I certainly wouldn't make him throw at a 130 hitter like LeFay or a Bavacqua who couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat. And I guarantee you this, when I pitched and I was going to pitch against a team that had guys on it like Bavacqua, I sent a limousine to get the to make sure he was in the lineup, because I kicked that ass any day in a week. He's a big mouth, I'll tell you that.
So Tommy just went off. He had several others great rants. He had
How could
one
you pick?
I know. He had one like with Dave Kingman after Kingman had a 3-home run game against the Dodgers, but this is my favorite. R.E.P. Tommy. And number one, this one also involving the Dodgers. The Cubs lost to the Dodgers. They were 5-14 on the season, worst record in baseball. The Chicago fans were angry. They were throwing garbage at the players, and the Cubs manager, he was not happy after the game. So we're going to take a listen right now.
I'll tell you one thing. I hope we get hotter than just to stuff it up them 3,000 people that show up every day. Because if they're the real Chicago fans, they can kiss my ass right downtown and print it. They're really, really behind you around here. My ass. What am I supposed to do? Go out there and let my f***ing players get destroyed every day and be quiet about it for the f***ing nickel dime people to show up? The f***ing don't even work. That's why they're out of the f***ing game. They ought to go out and get a f***ing job and find out what it's like to go out there and earn a f***ing living. 85% of the f***ing world's working. The other 15 come out here.
So Lee Elia there with that classic rant, and he was not immediately fired. He lasted another 4 months before being dismissed, but the mother of all meltdowns, Lee
Those
Elia.
Are good.
April Those are good. 1983, so that's my top five.
All right, here's mine. See, yours, it's weird. You have Hal McCray at 3. I have Hal McCray at 5. Okay? So I have Hal McCray bloodying somebody, I don't know what, the whole spin. Like, see, that's why you need those old-style phones, man. It had weight to it. Obviously, you don't want to see anybody get hurt, but the thing goes around. It's something that you can really throw. It's so good. I got Hal McCray at number 5. Lee Elia, you had him at number 1. I actually had him at number 4. And I think that might be low. Because I've heard it before, and I mean, it's a great rant. Good Lord, it's a great rant. But I put it at number 4. My number 3, I'm surprised you didn't have Mike Tyson eating Lennox Lewis's children.
I did think about that. That was in consideration.
I don't even think that Lennox Lewis had children at the time that Mike Tyson said he was going to eat those children. But I just loved it because it's Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson screaming things is great. The other part of it is, like, there's everybody behind him where they're really excited and supportive. And then he says eating children. There's one guy in the back like, I don't know about that. So that's number 3. Number 2, we actually play this as a rejoin. Jim Schoenfeld, Don Kaharsky, when he called him a fat pig. Do you remember this?
I do not.
From the NHL? Jim Schoenfeld, when he called Don Kaharsky, when he said, eat another donut, it's because you fell, you fat pig. That one is my number two. And we actually play that as a rejoin coming back. It was when Kaharsky had fell, called Kaharsky a fat pig. I think Schoenfeld, if I'm not mistaken, the refs refused to take the ice until Schoenfeld was either suspended, reprimanded, whatever it was after that. But that's still one of my favorites. And my number one was the Bobby Knight halftime speech. Purdue, I think it was 1991. It was recorded, I believe, by Lawrence Frank, who was their team manager at the time. He put it in a backpack, put a tape recorder in a backpack. Bobby Knight runs in. He says, I'm just going to say one thing, and then I'm getting the bleep out of here. It goes after Greg Graham for not recovering on defense. Which, I don't know if I should admit this, I was watching this a couple of weeks ago, and Axel goes, Dad? And I'm like, that's not me, that's Bobby Knight. That's Bobby Knight, that's not me. And yes, I do sound close to that, I don't cuss like that, but I do sound close to that when they won't put their toys away. I do have that in me, where the voice will roll downhill and basically roll out the windows and down the street and up to the high school. But yeah, that's Bobby Knight halftime speech, 1991. I'll run you guys till you can't eat supper. That's my number one. So Bobby Knight, Jim Schoenfeld, Mike Tyson, Lee Elia, Hal McCray. You got to stop playing the clips with your – I don't have any of the clips with me. You upstaged me on purpose, Pierno.
No, but it makes it so much better when you have the audio.
Well, yeah, but if I'm still thinking about it, I can't go make you get the audio for it. And plus, you've already played it because we agree with each other so much.
Well, everybody realizes what's up with that, so
yeah, it's okay. The audio's good, too. All right. There were a couple ones that a lot of people are getting. Again, I'm not going to play. No playoffs. No practice. The Denny Green one, that's been done to death, hasn't it? Hey, Dennis Green was a much better coach than just that rant, wasn't he? Dennis Green was a great coach.
Yeah. Herm Edwards.
That one, I think, has been overdone. And again, I don't like some of these guys, like Bobby Knight's, well, I don't know. Bobby Knight's not that great of a dude.
Mike Singletary had one.
Yeah, and then the whole drop in your pants thing, and then he was like winless as a high school coach. He's a better player than a coach, okay? But the other ones, like, I don't know, like I always feel like, hey, you just mentioned it. We remember Hal McCray for that, but Hal McCray got the Royals to a over 500 record. That's probably the last time they did it for a long time. Like some of the other ones, I give Dennis Green more credit than just that rant. He was a really, really, really good coach. Herm Edwards is a good coach. Doing a good job. So I give him a little bit more credit. Still, another thought-provoking, wonderful top five by Pierno. Worker shoot, 12:20 p.m. Eastern. Brandon Marcello going to join us, 12:40. Also, something's very uncomfortable. And Tim Tebow's retirement got me thinking about LeBron James, of all people. It's Ken Carmen on CBS Sports Radio.